Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to everybody that's listening in to Wise Women Media Radio Show. This is Anita, and Gwen's on the line with me. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, Anita. How are you?
Okay, it looks like we've got kind of a big news show tonight because there's been so much going on. So I wanted to thank our sponsors before we get started. Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, and the Hoodooed blog. And was there anything else that you wanted to add for openers?
I have to tell you, it's I'm kind of stunned at how much is going on out there and how much it isn't being talked about as far as the change and the protest. And the mainstream media is just absolutely ignoring everything, it seems like to me.
Well, I'm going to tell you some weird stuff that was happening to me tonight. I just tried to post about the show on Twitter. My tweets were actually blocked, so nothing went through. So I found that quite interesting. But I've experienced horrible, horrible agitation within the past 24 hours, just really agitated, and the things that I've tried to post online have not gone through. I could not even post about this show on the Posterous blog. So, I would try to just post, go ahead.
Well, we went through an incredible shift yesterday. I think that the poles of the earth are being re-grounded, if you will. I think there's a huge shift going on, and the Van Allen belt, the magnetosphere of this planet, is being affected. It's affecting people, and it's affecting events. And I think it's tangling a little bit with the you're talking about the mental body of the planet up there, and the internet is the manifest representation of that. So it doesn't surprise me a bit that there's all kinds of internet trouble right now. I've used Hootsuite, and it's been working out pretty well for me. I actually am just trying to go into there because that sounds so strange that you couldn't get things out on Twitter, you know?
No, I could not at all post about this show. And I found that quite unprecedented. I mean, I've definitely had the feeling that I've been censored before, but never have I been censored like this today for some reason. It was just, now see, I just tweeted, and it didn't come up on my page. It tweeted, it actually accepted the tweet, but it did not go on my page. So whether it's going in actual feed or whatever, then when I went to the Wise Women Media, it looks like it took it now, but when I was trying to do the promo for the show, it wasn't going through at all.
Well, like I said, it seems that there's a little bit of disruption going on here and there, but I think that on the whole, it's probably I think it's probably just a momentary flutter, you know?
Well, a friend of mine, I was getting ready to go to a women's circle last night, and a friend of mine sent me some information about the eclipse, which I found quite interesting, very thought-provoking. And if you all want to do a search for it, it's called Solar and Lunar Eclipses. Don't Watch Them. And what this person was saying is that the energy is so disruptive and so it's unauspicious. It's not auspicious energy. It's not good luck. It's not fortune. It's very not auspicious.
Well, it's one way of seeing it. Another way of seeing it is also, you know, I always work as a shaman in these cases. I'm just playing the positive beat here. Of course, you have to be careful, especially with anything like an eclipse point. It can, we all know that you should never watch one with the naked eye. There's good reason for it. It's a lot of energy, and it can powerfully affect your lens, the lens of your eyes. But this one was happening in an alignment with Sun, Moon, and Pleiades star system, Alcyon, the son of the Pleiades. And I have always understood and felt the energy of any eclipse to be a power down. It's like going down and then power back up. It's like rebooting a computer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And this one,
well, that's a good way of looking at it. Now, last night it was really interesting because after our little circle, I have an app on my phone that's Google Sky. So I actually put it together, you know, put in like Alcyon searched for Pleiades to see the actual alignment. And it was really cool because it really did go, you know, moon behind it, the sun. It was below the horizon, of course, when I was looking at it. So I wasn't looking at it. I was looking at it on the app on my phone. So it went moon, sun, and then right next to it was the Pleiades. So it was really kind of, it was really interesting to see it on that application. How do you think that this star alignment has affected what happened this weekend in Chicago, that mainstream news agencies are covering?
Well, basically, I think, like I said, it's a rebooting of the planet. And so there's a lot of, you know, death and rebirth going on. We're past Saturn and into Pluto when you talk about these kinds of energies. The eclipse, though, I think should be pointed out from the very practical point of view that it was a Gemini eclipse. And there's something that I'd like to share because, you know, we're talking about polarities here, and they're getting extreme. So it's, you know, on the one hand, there's the very, very light, and on the other hand, there's the very, very dark, and there is no gray matter in between. We take another swan dive into some 2012 astrology on Sunday, and I'm reading from Planet Waves, the daily astrology and adventure site online. And it says that the sun enters Gemini, which I was aware of because I'm a Sag, it's my opposite, you know, reflection, and so I'm aware of it. Followed by several hours later, a powerful eclipse of the sun. This combination of factors indicates a rapid shift of energy and acceleration of events, which will be followed by three more eclipse-like alignments between now and June 5th. So in the next 2 weeks, you know, grab your rosary beads or, you know, your goddess chalice or your Tibetan prayer beads or whatever you hang on to, because we're going for a ride. This is the very heart of 2012 astrology is happening right now. It's like winter solstice is just going to put the period to the end of the full meat of a sentence that we're in right now. This eclipse represented the thresholds in time, and it's got several properties to it, including a shift in continuity, a sense that events are becoming karmic or destined, and they're getting just plain intense. And that's because of the polarities, again, the dark, dark, and the light, light. And if anybody wants to see, we don't have the chat room open. Well, listen.
I do. If you refresh your screen, I just actually got that open.
Okay. I will. I will do the. I'm doing that now, and I will actually put the a link to this information into the chat room. And so when you're talking about that, I certainly do get it. Last night myself, I was working to late to make a deadline that I had to make for shipping today after all the other stuff I did was, you know, Sunday show and such. And I was aware, because we were on the radio, we were on air while the eclipse was, you know, beginning. And I was aware as I worked through the evening of intense shifting. And I think that like I said before, too, our northern and southern poles, those are the, if you will, lightning rods for energy to flow through the planet and to circulate around the planet in the magnetosphere. And I think there was a huge shift, very physically, as well as on several dimensional levels. So yesterday's, anybody saw, the only place that you could see it was Democracy Now. If you saw the film of Amy Goodman's crew took of the veterans for peace who came, and all these veterans were throwing their medals.
I saw that.
Yeah. To me, that was intense. In fact, I've noticed that, listen, I don't know about you, Anita, but I mean, even with the Folger coffee commercials at Christmas, I get misty-eyed, okay? I'm an empath. That's how I do what I do with my vocation. But my empathic abilities have become the tool of my own personal evolution, too. And I am emotionally transmuting a lot of things. So if I see that going on, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. You know what I'm saying?
Right. As a veteran myself, I thought if I had been there, I probably would have done the same, because this what's happening now no longer represents America. It no longer represents those fundamental things that were why I went into the military to begin with. And I'm sure the younger people even more so, because I was never stationed at the front in any kind of conflict, whereas these younger people have been. So this is even more, it was probably more of a profound experience even for them, you know.
Well,
so,
you consider that 18 a day that come back from all of this recycling tours of duty and the PTSD and everything else that these guys, these women and these men deal with, who are, you know, chumped into becoming warriors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you consider what they have dealt with, and what they are dealing with, and the rate of 18 a day taking their own lives, and to have all that in your head and know that, and the injustice of these wars, and the drone war that they're shifting to also, which, by the way, if you took a look at the police brutes, you know, very important to mention here, too, did you know that there were over 40 people, police officers, street police, that got the blue flu during all of this that would not come in?
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think is the deal with that?
I think that there's, well, to take a look. This is DHS, okay? This is Department of Homeland Security, has outfitted all of the major metropolitan police forces. They're insisting that they buy into the, I mean, Oakland just bought a tank, okay?
Right, and Tampa did,
I mean,
too.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
they got
supposedly Tampa did, too, because in preparation for the RNC.
Yeah, this is brutality and jackbooted morons coming after us, headless, you know, mindless. These cops are mindless fucks. They're fucking pigs. We're back to 68 now. You know what I'm saying? We're in the streets we're scrambling. We're saying, you know, it's unjust. It's unjust, and we want change to occur. We're trying to shift the conversation in this country, and the corporation, the politicians for profit who are running this country as puppets for the puppeteers on within all of the banks and corporations. I mean, this action is they've got the mainstream media sewed up. You didn't see any. In fact, CNN got called to task because I don't know if you've seen it. The video's been all over Facebook and Twitter of all the people who came around the CNN correspondent who was standing there saying at first that, you know, there was the line that the police gave them that they came only because all of the protesters showed up with sticks and bottles and this kind of thing, which was an obvious lie. And the CNN person was starting to say that, and as they did it out when Geraldo Rivera or any other Fox person came, the people from the protest began to gather around the broadcasting CNN person and said, CNN is propaganda. CNN is propaganda, and wouldn't quit. And I think it resonated with whoever's sitting on in those editing or directing booths in CNN, because CNN actually began to put the real data on. It was horrible in Chicago. People got their heads smashed.
That's been done before. Huh? That's very rarely, I can't say never, it's very rarely been done before where the mainstream media has actually shown the real story on a protest, on a direct action.
Something went on last night. That I'm not really sure about. It's just like you say. It's weird. Things are popping, and the shift that's going on is bringing really, really large polarities. Now you get over 40 cops that pull blue flu instead of showing up to become brutes, you know, against citizens. And you got to wonder how many cops are rethinking their jobs in the New York City Police Department after everything that's going on. In Denver, cops walked away from the brutality that started to go on during, you know, the occupations in Denver and the live stream events. But it is famously, it is not getting, the only place you're hearing about it is in the networks, our networks, the social networks, and on little shows like this. Listen, even Young Turks, we do better due diligence than they do. I've got more information than Cenk and his people do a lot of times. I'm like, where the fuck are these people coming from? Are they not keeping an eye on the Twitter feeds? Do they not see what people are saying? What the fuck?
I really feel that the information is shielded from the people that are actually going to be on the air. Tell me what you about this young man that was hit by the truck yesterday. Was it yesterday or the day before?
It was yesterday that. And that video is all over the place, and that showed up on CNN, too, thank gosh. But it's the only place. And, of course, they're not saying much for very long on CNN. MSNBC hasn't had shit, as far as I know. But I don't watch them anymore. The guy was, this police van hit a young woman protester and knocked her down, and a large guy who was very tall stepped in front of the van to try and shield the woman, and the van sped up to, like, I don't know, maybe anywhere from 11 to, like, 18 miles an hour, and was, you know, the guy was so tall that he could not, you know, he couldn't step out of the way. He was pushed along and by the van. It was very, very dangerous. This guy's got a hell of a lawsuit against the city of, and that dirty, sawed-off, little fucking bastard Rahm Emanuel that got him, bought himself a friggin' mayorship. I mean, when they say Chicago politics, I guess it's right, isn't it? But please pardon me for nastying up your show like that, Anita. But I mean,
say what you feel.
Hey, listen, after spending yesterday with a thumb pretty much on the Twitter feeds and then watching it, and then if anybody wants to see what really went on, I really recommend Democracy Now, today's Democracy Now, because she was there. She interviewed Scott Olson. She taped most of the vets throwing their medals and what they had to say, and she did a really wonderful coverage. Current television no longer really covers left or dissident or anarchist events at all. And let me tell you what, the Black Brigade, which is the Black Bloc, it's the anonymous with the black masks and the black, you know who they are, right?
Right, right.
They were very peaceful. They didn't do anything. They just were there to help back up the nurses and Pink. I mean, there were several groups represented. And basically, folks have just, you know, I really zoned out right there because I did a task. I'm so sorry, Anita. I was talking about that there was no coverage since Keith Olbermann quit Current or got mutually fired or whatever. He's been tweeting a little bit about this, and every time I catch him, I always send a PS, we need you back now.
You know? Well, it would be nice if he stopped his own network and he just told everybody else just to go to hell and did his own thing. I mean,
one of the things that we don't, you know, if you've worked in journalism or in news, I worked with print papers, but I was following media around all the time. And I can tell you this, if you want to do news the way that, or if you want to present what's going on, and I mean, to me, Keith Olbermann is as close to Edward R. Murrow as we're getting in this world right now. And his commentaries are heartfelt. A lot of people forget that the guy lost both parents who he's extremely close to in the last year, plus he got screwed by making a deal with people he thought were integritous and wouldn't screw him over. And he was probably, don't get me wrong, I know every side of the story has to be told, but I think from the real perspective we have to remember that Keith Olbermann has wonderful commentary and observations and gets to the heart of it because he was enabled by the money it takes to purchase that kind of instant flow of information. You understand what I'm saying? And for him to go over to, you know, YouTube or whatnot, you know, Young Turks had people, as they still try to do, satellited all through ongoing events that were using. Keith doesn't have that. And from what I can see, Young Turks hasn't been making the best of what they used to have lately. You know, I don't know what's going on there. I'm not saying their integrity is not good. I would never do that. I'm just saying that I've got more due diligence going down. You know what I'm...
Right.
I have more information pulse than they seem to over there, and it makes me wonder. It's an election year. We're talking about a completely socked and plugged into the Democrat Party group of ownership. So, you know, you begin to wonder if we're looking at another bought and paid for political campaigning unit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's heading that way. It's heading like I think the paradigm now is same that it was in 2000 and 2004 and 2008. You know, most of the progressive / liberals, which I think is just another name, another label, are saying, you know, oh God, we got to vote for Obama because we've got to keep Romney out. Like they're holding their nose again. They're voting out of fear again. The people that are dyed-in-the-wool Obama supporters refuse to believe that he's created even more war than the Bush family ever did, and it's just going on and on and on, and it continues. And what's frightening about the drone wars is that people are killed without a war front. Not that that makes it right, but the people, including the civilians, are killed with impunity. And it's being done in a room with a bunch of young people that were trained before they came into the military on their own fucking PlayStations and Xboxes and everything else. So excuse the French and excuse the anger with that.
What we're expressing is the frustration with the lack of due diligence that in our media and what we used to call the fourth estate or journalism. And people are watching, the majority of people in this country are watching the major networks. They're watching CBS or NBC or ABC. They, you know, it's just political junkies who go over to Fox, and it's dumb bent over political junkies on that side. And then you got the or neocons, excuse me. Then you have the what I'm starting to understand is the fading neoliberal kind of element over at MSNBC. Who of us doesn't understand that Big Ed Schultz, who I used to respect a great deal, when he's in front of that camera. Now, I've heard his radio show during the day, and he does knock Obama back and forth. But once he steps in front of the camera at MSNBC, you know, it's like you could call him Brownie for the kind of, you know, ass kissing he does. And Rachel Maddow, she's nothing but a whitewash for the White House. There is nothing that, you know, she puts up a good front here and there. There's certainly nothing wrong with her reporting and her ability to teach us very clearly about the sides of an issue. However, her bent is definitely towards, the Obama White House and the corporate war machine that probably is General Electric. You know?
It just continues to be a situation of, I want to call it Obama washing. It's like everything that was evil under Bush is A-okay if it's done under Obama. I simply don't understand that whole thing. I just don't get it. War is war. Indiscriminate killing with impunity, it doesn't change just because Obama's doing it. It doesn't make it right. Yet I've had people just completely attack me on my own Facebook page and on Twitter because I feel this way. And one guy just this week said, "When did you start feeling like this?" I said, "I felt like this when Obama got the nomination and then walked right across the street and gave his speech to AIPAC pledging more funding for more war." And I was telling people, if you're going to vote for this guy, he's a war president. Oh, no, he'll give us hope. He gives us hope. He'll give us change. We'll have exactly what we want now. Obama will buy us a house. you know, whatever the hell they thought.
Well, Huffington Post, which is, you know, backed up by a neocon AOL, I think it's important, let me say this, they call us radicals, they call us, you know, I sound like Kevin now, they call us, you know, liberals, they call us radicals, because we emphasize the anchors or the roots of everything now by saying, you know, like, okay, well, Arianna Huffington had a wonderful idea, which she didn't pay many people for, and she went around ripping off the news here and there. And then she, you know, and really, she did an excellent job with what she did with her aggregate news page. And she had something that was really pretty left-leaning, and let's get away from the left-right crap and just say the right side of humanity. And,
right.
And she was spreading good news. Then she understood that she could make herself almost $1 billion personal if she hooked up with, you know, AOL, which is nothing but, you know, neocon-backed corporate profiteering America with a backup for the war machine. And when I say these things, and I went into they call us radicals and out of our minds and all of this, because we do, it's important to understand where your information is coming and the goddamn thorough rub-a-dub-dubbing washing it's getting. What they are doing to filter and dumb down the population of my country, everywhere from, you know, the schooling of kids and the absolute outright look. It was part of one of the Republican candidates for president's platform to actually come out, stand on a stage and say, you don't need to be going to college. I mean, where the hell does that come from? My mother was head of the Republican Party in Broward County for a couple years when I was a little kid. And she was what you would call an Ike or Eisenhower Republican. She would be absolutely thunderstruck. She raised her eyebrows a few times at Reagan and then Bush won, you know, but that was when she crossed, was 88. I don't think that she would be voting for, I know she wouldn't vote for the Democrats. She did not really care much for Bill Clinton, but she thought he made some good choices. But my mother didn't realize the total loop of what corporate America was up to. You know, hey, I'm a Kodak kid. I was raised on Kodak stock. I went to the best schools because of that. You know, I'm from Rochester, New York. My great-great-grandfather gave George Eastman land, so, you know, that's where I come from. I have to tell you that when you come from that kind of a background with that kind of history, and I was raised to give back to my community, politically, for community service, whatever way I could, because that community provided me with the privilege to have whatever I did have and to gain what I did when I was growing up in schooling or what have you, or a nice home. You follow where I'm coming from? It was that kind of a Republican family.
Right.
It's not like that anymore. And my mother would probably not be a Democrat. She'd be a radical.
Mm-hmm.
I think she would be a radical at this point, saying, what is going on? Because she wouldn't believe that corporations, you know, it's like Kodak busted up into 13 different companies, and it basically has, it quit. 15 years ago, it quit giving out any kind of, you know, all the benefits they used to give to their people, all the family-oriented structure that was built into the large corporations, you know. Corporations used to take care of people. Then there was something we had called antitrust, you know. that kept them from gaining too much, you know, ground with pure profiteering. And when Clinton came into office, he helped to get rid of a lot of that, you know. Glass-Steagall is no more. You can thank Uncle Clinton, you know.
And, you know, I really wasn't paying too much attention. You'd think I would have been when Reagan was in office, but that was primarily when I was active duty. So
yeah.
I was so busy and working on my career that it was really funny.
Yeah.
As a military intelligence person, I wasn't paying too much attention to the politics, except what
but
I was reading at the office that was classified. So that's pretty funny. I was... You know, I tried to read the Stars and Stripes every day, but that really wasn't news. And what I would do is I would go to the kiosk and I would get the foreign news and read that, because I felt that it was more balanced and it gave me more information that I could use in my different point of view. And it was funny because even over there, the Newsweek, The Time, and the U.S. News and World Report had European editions. And I don't know if they... I mean, the stories would be totally different.
Oh,
so,
hey, listen, do you get... Well, I get cable, and I just found out that because I get HD, I can go up in the numbers of channels up into the 700s here. And I can find the European edition of CNN, and it's totally different.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, these guys are almost radical. My God. I was really stunned. But it's not always clicked on. But when it is, I get, you know, I'm like, ooh-hoo, look at this. You know, I'm getting truth. You know, it's like.
Really, totally different news, and I don't think that people understand that our news is so filtered and censored here that it's a wonder that we get anything at all. You know, I really noticed that when, and that was when I was in the service in the early 80s. So
yeah.
This hasn't been an overnight thing. It hasn't been since Bush was in office. This dumbing
this
down
has been a long,
thing of our news has been on for a while. And
well,
I'd much rather take, you know, how people get open source intelligence is really quite simple. You take a foreign news report, and then you take one from maybe someplace in the European Common Market, one of those countries. Like, for instance, Pravda, and then the Paris Herald Tribune, and then take something from a stateside, you know, all different newspapers, news sources, and then somewhere in the middle of those three things on, say, you're reading on the same topic, is the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but you'll definitely see different slants when you look at it. Now, it's the intelligence person's... their talent is supposed to be able to find the truth in all of that and actually be able to make a report, a general report, from those three points of view and come someplace close to the truth with all of that. So that's
analysis. That is news analysis is what it is. It's just crazy that folks are so... I get more news on Facebook, for crying out loud, that's of value to me. And I know that my lifestyle is not that much different than my neighbors. And I live in a community that mirrors communities all across the United States of America, most of Western Europe. You see where I'm going with this. And the news... I find the news of value when it was... I don't watch television news anymore because I'm trying to keep my blood pressure from going freako. But then I get the news on all these wonderful places you go on, say, Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. I mean, there's so many different networks you can link in, or you can actually... farm it or fish it for whatever you're looking for. There's so many different pages. And, you know, you do a little due diligence to find out, you know, you don't believe everything you hear. But I've been on there long enough that I realized, like, the information being posted by, say, the Real Coastal Warriors, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, those ladies have done a hell of a job. You know, they got stolen. Somebody took Coastal Warriors from them, some neocon, and tried to start printing or pushing a pro-BP message subtly through on it. And those ladies, bless their hearts, they fought back and they went up as Real Coastal Warriors. Facebook didn't do crap for them.
No,
but,
Facebook didn't even, Facebook allowed it to happen, allowed it to continue. So,
yeah.
I was on that group when that happened, and then I ended up on the new group. And the big thing was they allowed a few people, maybe one or two, to be admins that ended up being the infiltrators, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, that's
kind
how
of funny.
It happened to begin with. And,
yeah.
And now when I have any dealings with anybody online, I'm extremely, extremely cautious. And I don't actually friend people anymore on Facebook unless I know them personally. Or I look at who they're friends with, and if we have a lot in common, like hundreds, then I will friend them. But that's rare.
That's what I think most people are learning to do on Facebook. I remember I got a couple of emails from Facebook saying, you know, there's been a complaint. And I've got a lot of friends because I was trying to promote the Here Be Monsters shows and of course, my business and such and a large spiritual community that I wanted to be a member of. But my politics and activism is right out there in front, much like you, Anita. And I guess I ticked a few people off. There's people I really respect who are liberal and they still hope for the best with their president and everything. And they have wonderful information they're putting out there, the good positive things that are being done, but they have blinders on. You know, they don't see the forest for the trees. And to them, I am just simply way too radical. And it's funny because the group over at the what is considered the wild, wild left thinks I'm way too namby-pamby about it all, you know. So it's funny. I know that the most important thing we can do right now is inform ourselves, make choices that make a difference, you know, like and going towards local sustainability and on into a global networking technology that allows us these absolutely wonderful, stunning friendships. I know people in Iran. I know I have a really great friend over in Pakistan that I talk to just about every day. I know people in Russia. The networks have provided us with such communication and hookup globally, and we are all pretty united. You know, they say birds of a feather fly together, flock together, right?
Right.
So, and hell, you and I, we formed a relationship, a friendship, and a cooperative relationship where we're working with communicating with the rest of the world and putting activist messages out there, and we're both spiritual women who are also putting out that information to the best of our ability through our own personal lens of it. And stunning stuff, you know?
I think that being spiritual, it really helps connect people. I mean, I know, you know, I've come into contact with so many people, but the relationships that seem to be true and remain constant are the ones that are spiritual ones for me. Anyway, that's kind of how it works for me. Is that the same with you?
Well, you know, that's my it's also my stock and trade. That's what I do. It's my life, the way I wag. So my family is pretty much, most of them are, they actually make a living within what you would call the spiritual or New Age metaphysical community. And I've known them for years. But I'll tell you what, I've also got a virtual family. You know, you do the promo. By the way, do me a favor, will you? You're sitting there at the control panel.
Okay.
Look at the recordings in there. Okay.
Okay.
Do you see an RT7 number one promo on there?
RT promo one. Yeah.
It's 30 seconds. Push the button.
Okay. Here goes.
Hi, Gwen here. I wanted to remind you that every show on Here Be Monsters is sponsored by Roundtree 7, and that's the number 7.com, bringing knowledge to the social consciousness, plenty of wonderful writers, and a videographer. And you can find us on Facebook with our chat group, which is Journey with Roundtree 7. Look us up. We'd be happy to hear from you, include you. Thank you.
I'll get better at that.
Hi, Gwen here. I wanted to remind
Whoa.
You that every show on Here Be Monster.
Okay. Woo!
Yeah.
They were all going here. I hit the wrong button. I was trying to hit it off, and I turned it on. Anyway, yeah, that sounds. That's a good little promo there. I like that.
Well, I'll get better as me and GarageBand are getting together. I actually did one specially for your show. I don't think I've uploaded it yet. But the thing is that I do have this virtual family within the blogosphere. I mean, that's what I was actually before Facebook or any. I blogged, and I met a lot of really wonderful people like Jack Todell and, of course, my Roundtree 7 family, David Williams and Oso. And anybody who's read Al Osorio, his work, understands the kind of messages that we're sending out of Roundtree 7, which is politically active, yes, but we're walking very spiritually on the right side of humanity. And that was my whole point, because you were talking about, you know, spiritual community health. I think the best you could say that David is maybe agnostic when it comes to that. Also is a very deeply spiritual fellow. He's a good Catholic, you might say. But he's an open-minded man, and he's also an indigenous, you know, one of the indigenous. He's Mesoamerican. But what do you call it? Mike Stimson, our Canadian friend, is an atheist, and David's wife. My point is that our values and ethics, our spiritual expression, you know, I find our morals and ethics or values are our spiritual expression. And I think it's very clear that people are making those choices with dedication these days, because you cannot stand on the side any longer.
Right. Right. It's a situation where we sink or swim together, and it's time to band together in spite of our differences or whatever. You know, we all essentially want the same things. We want,
yeah.
you know, decent work, a living wage. We want, if we're spiritual people, we want our spiritual needs met. We want to raise our families. We want to retire with dignity and grace, and be honored for our knowledge. It's pretty much all the same thing. We want, you know, clean food. We want, you know, clean and safe drinking water. And we want our leisure too. We want our lives free of government interference. And I think those are pretty essential to most people. It's health, community, food, shelter, the basics. Those are being taken away now, one by one, or they're poisoned. And we know that, for instance, you know, just using the Gulf oil gusher and what's happened since with the aftermath of that, you know, that was clearly a poisoning, you know, it was an ecocide and terricide. And, yeah, I'm using tough words, but, you know, when you go back and you look at the definitions, that's what it is. And, you know, I've made deep personal friendships all along the way over these past 2 years with people all over the Gulf region, where I know that I could call them and say, look, I've met some of these people in person. I've not met some of these people. It's only been an online relationship or over the phone. But these are people I could pick up the phone and talk to about anything probably at this point, because we all the same things, and we all don't think the same, don't live the same, don't worship the same. And it's quite a blessing to realize that this is the new paradigm we're under. This is what's happening now. It's a drawing together of all the different nations and people and everybody that's different coming together and unifying. I love it. I love the whole idea. So
you know, you have to remember too that we're basically there is a fantastic conclusion and a fantastic beginning occurring. It's quite true. We are going through precession of the equinoxes, but precession astronomy aside, the alignment to the heart of the galaxy is a pretty rare event. And also, remember, we're coming to the conclusion of several world ages and beginning a whole new chapter of world ages. In other words, we're coming to that 26,000-year total completion of astronomical great year of going through all the houses of the constellations and beginning again. Aquarius is the beginning of the calendar, the star calendar, star date, you know. And I think I'm absolutely aware that we are going through evolution. Children are being born today with more brain turned on. That doesn't mean they're smarter. It means that they're accessing more tools and gray matter. Their sensuality is vaster, and their sensuality extends into extra, what we think of as extra sensuality is becoming second nature to them. They are born that way. You ever hear the story of the child who was born with the veil over their face or whatever? They're the ones who are the gifted ones in life. Do you understand
that?
Yeah,
I have heard that.
Well, the reason is because the child, the unborn child, goes through a trauma of sorts in the womb. And that trauma with that sac, that extra embryonic sac over its head, and that trauma knocks a portion of the brain on, always has for thousands of years. Now, the shaman, the priests, and we know that ancient civilizations were very advanced. They, you know, Pharaoh's conical crown was a device to achieve that that effort. This extra brain capacity, it's the same thing, you know, that we've been studying it through psi science or parapsychology for the last hundred so many years. This is where, you know, different portions of the brain are being accessed and worked on. And these are the people who have clairvoyance and clairaudience. They mean they're smarter or more creative than the next human being. It means that they are accessing more sensuality. So they're getting more information, you know?
Right.
That's how the psychic is enabled to see the, you know, the living library of your emotional body and tap into it and see what you've been through and what those choices have created in your life and where they're taking you. They're just accessing information. They're not freaking witchy, spooky, gypsy people. There, it's actually a science. Russians are far ahead of us on all of this. They've known this for 50 years. They've been actually taking advantage of people who have that brain power turned on. And I think our own military tried to do such a thing at one point. Certainly our intelligence agencies have employed people who have larger brain capacity in this way. And you can call it remote viewing. You can call it, it's just the ability to access information and so much more of it with the filter of awareness. We're unaware of, geez, do you know how much our senses are taking in this very second that we only have a teeniest, tiniest portion of awareness to create our reality with?
There's a movie about how our military failed. I can't think of the name of the movie, but it had the word goat in it.
It's a comedy, yeah.
They made it into a comedy, but what was interesting was a lot of those facts were very, very true.
You know, our military and our intelligence community, if you look at the opening of the film that Naomi Klein did on shock doctrine, you know,
right.
I mean, this was something that they were trying to do because it enables a greater capacity for prognostication, the ability to make more, you know, more fully holistic choices within the different, you know, within the reality that really truly is our reality. It's not through a glass darkly anymore. It's with clarity because our sensuality is expanded. It's a science. This isn't booga booga, you know. And one of the ways that the ancients understood that we access this was to, you know, the repetitive practices, which we call ritual, enable us to train our minds to open up further. You follow?
Right.
You know? And
mm-hmm.
and basically, the Abrahamic religions, unfortunately, use this to actually atrophy our senses and to put controlling onto us, you know, control factors. Hell, church is nothing but a way, you know, religions, Abrahamic religions, the one God thing, is just a way to sort of collectively round up humanity and get them to, you know, pay off for you.
It's a way to prepare people to actually become part of the masses, the collective mass, instead of being, they're actually crowd following instead of being individuals that are going to stand up and lead or have a different opposing viewpoint or whatever. So I see a real trend with this. It's more or less a teaching, a conditioning of group following within a group and not as an individual. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly.
No, what you're trying to do is you're getting to the place where you're going to say that they scare you into it. They use fear. Fear is the great big tool that's been used to, and you got to wonder, with all this fear going on, I mean, goodness gracious, have you noticed the fear?
Oh, yeah.
I've always been suspicious of the fear, and I've always rebuked it. I mean, you know, I had the Penguins and the Padres bat me around as a kid. I always rebuked it. you tell me a brand new little baby's all full of sin and devil, you know, it has to be baptized or go to hell. Oh, what are you trying to push on me here, buddy? My God, I didn't fall off the turnip truck last night. I might only be 8 years old. But, you know, fear. And I use my own background to, you know, make the relationship to it. But fear, think about it. All they do is use fear. Have you ever noticed the goddamn pharmaceutical commercials all night long?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you got this wrong with you and you got that wrong. Hey, how about it's natural, it's how the human body works. We're just going to bear through it here. Do you know that the water in almost all states of this country is so poisoned by all of the different antidepressants that people have been actually convinced that they should be taking? Now, it's a terrible thing to say to somebody who's being helped by the pill that it's doing, you know, they shouldn't be doing it. I have no right to say something like that, so please, you know, don't think that I am. But, however, there's always a choice, you know? There's always a choice. And
I
think
some of these people think or are led to believe that they can't function without taking a pill. You know, is that a form of brainwashing? Is that a form of conditioning? You know,
I think it is. I could see the sheep, like, you know, a lamb of God take away the sins of the world. It's like, wait a minute, man, I ain't no sheep. You didn't tell me how to live. I mean, I always was naturally rebelling against that kind of thing. I don't do well with authority, they say. I am 50-something, and I still don't do well. But you were military. You have discipline. You can play on a team. And I play on a team, too. Hell, I do well with my virtual team, you know, Roundtree. I do well with groups of people when I'm doing workshops. I'm a solitary practitioner, but I'm always happy to walk and stand in a circle among my equals, you know? Everybody is equal. I don't do the garter belt thing. You know what I mean, honey?
Right, right. Well, I've always had a problem with authority. I can deal with it for short periods of time. But I think the thing with me is that if I'm doing a job, I need recognition, and I need an even rate of exchange.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as I was in the military and I was getting paid and I was getting recognized for my work, you know, that was a good thing. But I've found that here in the civilian world, that's not the case. They just want to... It really is, as Roseanne says, it really is slavery out here when you're working a job for the man, for somebody, for a corporation, for somebody else. The only way to be free really is to work for yourself. Otherwise, you're just indebted.
Well, it is true, but there is something, you know, if we can work as a community, there's nothing wrong with that. And there has to be a place where we come together. And we work in collective. But everything right now, however, everything right now is breaking down. Anybody who hasn't taken a look at what's going on financially and politically in Western Europe at this point with the EU is horribly out of the loop. And yet I can go right now after I get off of this show with you over to... say Publix and ask anybody walking there and everyone I meet in the aisle, and none of them are going to really know because people are so, well, I think they're tired. I think their fatigue is psychological and emotional. I think people are fatigued by all of the war and all the corporate poisoning. I think that folks are just waiting for the next boot to drop, myself, several times. And I guess that's the feeling that you're talking about. when we were beginning the show and you asked about, you know, folks are, you know, just, it seems like people are being affected and things are crazy. There's a lot of, you know, darkness around. Well, yeah, I think there is a lot of darkness. Who feeds on all this fear? Who does it feed? You know, when you think about the physics of it, and as a spiritual person, you know that energy is reciprocal. Hell, that's how you do magic, baby. You send it to the universe and we want it to come home. So you know that people are, you know, as well as I do, Anita, you can walk into a room and if there's a vampire in the room, they're going to be sucking the energy out of somebody in there. And they're making their rounds. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
who's feeding on all this fear? This is a collective fear that has been fostered by big money, basically, the people who have so much. It's been fostered. Really, it has. And who's feeding on this? Who's getting the full tummy here? Who's doing the good? Who's at the banquet table, baby?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, if you listen to you and I, when we're sitting alone over at the coffee shop, we begin to have discussions that go into the consciousness shift kind of show that says, you know, well, these are extra-dimensional beings that, you know, for a long time people have been aware that these other entities, if you will, walk into people who are about ready to give up and make a deal and say, okay, sure. I don't care. I don't want this place. Take it. You know? The other question is, where are all the children? The children that go missing every year. When you find out how many kids are kidnapped or run away and are never heard from again, also, where are these children going? What is happening to them? When you understand that they have the most, as they would say, exquisite energy resonance to put out, what is going on? Because we found so many of these horrible porno and white slavery and horrifying just conditions of torturing children. Who is actually, you know, we've been taught to think that humanity has very sick, psychopathic people, but what if it's an energy that's being created that is sustaining something?
Right.
You know, I'm just saying it's a thought. It's a thought that we need to think about because we need to find solutions to this. We need to evolve beyond it. And it's going on. And I think that, you know, we have to consider that all are one, that we are all connected, all my relations. So if we are all connected, what is that connection creating when it is in fear? And who connects to it and prospers from it? You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's a good question.
Go ahead.
What are your thoughts on the upcoming I lost my word. The upcoming cosmic happenings, which of course are we're having another eclipse. I think it's on the 4th, and then we're having summer solstice. There's a lot of cosmic things in addition to the changes that we've just experienced. There's going to be more of these. What's your take on
it? I think that we have to pay attention right now to what's going on around us. I think one thing, I think it's wise not to be afraid. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. FDR was quite a shaman. You know, because when we're in fear, we're projecting or we're lost in a loop in the past. If we stay in the present, in the here and now. And this is an old mantra in our crowd. And it makes it nonetheless true. And the truth is that if we stay in the present, then there's things. Because, you know, we're talking about some pretty scary stuff, but we're not afraid about it right now, right?
I'm just going along with the fear.
Right. If we can stay in the present, we're going to be just fine. I think that of course there's going to be a lot of shakeup. There, none of us really knows what's going to happen. We can read the signals, the magnetic signals. We can take our cues and look for the clues from people who have more sensual capacity to download the information, attuned astrologers and people who have been considering the political situation for a long time. It's like paying attention to Paul Krugman. That guy's
right.
Pretty smart. He's been pretty precog, you know. He's called it, and he's calling it again. It doesn't take an idiot to see. In fact, was it CNN today that had posted, or was it Huffington Post?
They said
hopetivism. Yeah, that was it.
Hopetivism.
Yeah,
there's more new words created under the Obama presidency than I have ever heard before. I can tell you
that.
This one
was goody because the headline said, you know, he isn't, you know, the president isn't fooling anybody with his hopetivism. We see him coming. Now, that was on Huffington Post. So, when you think about it, there's a lot of crap going on, man. You know? I think that things are going to change, and probably no way that we actually can foresee. It's just real obvious that I hesitate to say anything, Anita, because I don't want to. I'm a businesswoman, and you're out there making a living too. We don't want to see bad things happen.
Right, right. Or put the words out in the air. We don't want to do that.
Right. And so we don't want to actually evoke the manifestation of bad things happening, calamity. But it's also foolish not to take a look at what's going on, especially over in, you know, Europe.
Well, I know Greece is really having some issues right now still. I think that they are definitely a country that knows that the European common market has not worked for them. And
they're getting ready to forfeit is what they're
right.
going to do. They are so desperate. The people of Greece are in such despair and have been in the streets without anything. I mean, they've cut all services. They call it austerity, and what it is neglect of a population. They have neglected the population.
What's amazing is the transition that's happened to that country since I lived there. I lived there for 3 years in the early 80s in Athens. That's where I was stationed. It was absolutely, in spite of it being a dirty, crowded, polluted city, I found it quite beautiful. I found the people just as charming as can be. There was very little crime. The people just welcomed Americans with open arms, even though their leader at the time, Papandreou, really walked. He got his education in the United States and married an American wife, but, you know, really was walking the fence between us and the Soviet Union at the time. So he really wanted the best of both worlds, and, you know, we were still in the middle of the Cold War at that time.
Yeah,
so
we
it
were.
Was,
we were.
Yeah,
that
was not Russia,
well, when I was over there. I was over there. My first trip to Greece was when he was in office. So yeah.
And I know that rent was, I paid no more than 200 drachma for rent, which probably would have figured to be like $125 or $150 at the time, depending on the exchange rate. It was close to that. Everybody had a job. People worked very hard, but they played very hard. There wasn't any sick people. They had a medical care program where everybody was treated. Their medical care was free. Their higher education was available to anybody who wanted it.
Right.
We used to go to the store and get cases of Dom Perignon champagne and beluga caviar, and that's what we had at our parties, or even if we were just having a dinner party. We could get a case of champagne for like, and I'm talking Dom Perignon, for like maybe $25 a case. You know,
wow.
it was just amazing. It was an amazing place to be at the time, and of course
it was always better in Europe.
Oh yeah, it was a socialist country. So as you can see, since they joined the European Common Market, it's been to their detriment. And unfortunately, the capitalism, the bastardized capitalism that we have now, is not. It's a failed experiment. That's all I can say. It's a failed experiment. It didn't work for them. It hasn't worked for us. And people are now starting to wise up and see that. Not enough.
No, the majority of people that you would talk to if you went over to, say, the movie theater on a night when a brand new big buster, blockbuster movie was opening, and you spoke to the people, the cross-section of people attending there, I think you'd find that the majority of those people, first of all, know nothing really about Occupy. They know very little. They only know that the crap that's being thrown at them from the mainstream media. Right. And even the most intelligent among them, they're out to enjoy a movie, and when they go home, they're taking care of their children. They're worrying about whatever bill they have to pay. They don't have time to devote to, you know, educating themselves to what is, it doesn't even occur to them to stop long enough to do that, because they're from task to task in survival 101 in America of 2012.
Right. And so now I keep, when is this same thing going to happen here? I mean, we have our Occupy, but we need everybody. We need almost everybody. We need majority of people. So many people are just totally fed up with what's happening in this country. But it's time for them to rise.
But the point is, the thing is that they don't actually, they don't know what is really going on. You know? So they,
and you know,
they may be set up, but they don't understand how to make a difference. They think if they vote, well, okay, the Democrat didn't do it, so let's put a Republican back in office.
Yeah, they think it's one or two. It's one or two, you know, the either or of the choices is what they think.
Choose from column A or column B.
Right.
They've been programmed. And the thing is, that to a certain extent they're right, because look what's going to happen. It's a reality manifest.
Right.
You and I may work to try and bring up awareness for the Green Party and to try and get Roseanne Barr as a candidate seriously. And we're right to do it. Yet how many people will actually pay attention and understand? And if she doesn't get...
I've got a caller. Hold just a second. Let me pop them in here. Hang on.
Okay.
Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, hi. Wow. thanks for taking the call. My name's Rain Burrows. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia. I am collecting petitions to get the Green Party on the ballot here. I just have this gut reaction when I hear people say, and no offense, but, you know, that people are having a very hard time keeping a roof over their head and taking care of their kids, and they have so much to do that they can't pay attention. I said that for years, and I'm over it. I think it's willful ignorance. If you're not affected directly, you don't do anything. And
good for you.
So that's just a point I wanted to make. And who is on the call? Is it Roseanne Barr?
No, this is Anita Stewart and Gwen Berry on the other line.
Oh, okay,
we're on two different sides of Florida. I'm in the Tampa area, and you're in West Palm Beach, right, Gwen?
I'm just below it in Lake Worth. Yeah,
okay.
Lake Worth. Well, just, close. I almost had it right.
Putting my daughter to bed, and I heard Roseanne, and then one of the voices sounded similar, and okay. Well, never mind, but that's just my point. I just think that people shouldn't get that. They shouldn't be allowed to wear, I don't have enough time to pay attention. That's all.
It's really amazing. I don't understand how, and it's a very valid point, I don't understand how people can become so just disconnected from what's going on in their own country. It's almost like really amazing, but I turned my television off probably about 3 months ago, and I found that to be a very freeing experience. But yet I still get my news on the internet, and I still listen to community radio, and I can do all of that stuff and keep my hands busy doing things either around the house or doing crafts or going to work or whatever. And I feel like I'm still getting the news, but that I'm not being assaulted by the commercials or the propaganda.
Well, I agree. I've had no cable for about 2 years, and I'm a very proud mama because I have an 11-year-old daughter, and I was having a weak moment, and I said, hey, Summer, I think maybe we're going to get the cable, but we're probably only going to get it for 6 months because it's got this cheap, you know, promo. And she said, no, Mom, I like it with no TV. We spend more time together. We play more games together. We do more together and so forth. So I haven't had TV in 2 years, and I know it's done me a world of good.
Yeah, because
that's excellent.
You find out
that's
things
excellent.
That are more edifying to do with your time, which is really... that's really what I've been doing, and I don't feel like I miss the news because I get the same news, but I get to filter it instead of getting the unfiltered from, which is mostly, I would say, quite a huge percentage of it is propaganda. So, but also, if you did want to I'm sorry, what's your first name again?
Rain, like the weather, R-A-I-N.
Okay, Rain, good. We did have Roseanne on the show. Gwen, do you remember when that was? Was that like a month and a half ago?
I think it's 5 weeks ago. And you're booking her into the Sunday show, right?
Yeah, we had her on the Monday night show, which is tonight's show. If you go back, Rain, if you check out wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, it's a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back on the blog post, you'll see the show with Roseanne, and there's an archive there. There's like a little player or a link, I don't know which, but you can click
right.
on it, and it will take you right to the show, and you can actually listen to it. We had her on this show for 2 hours.
Can you invite Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential nominee, who's a doctor in Massachusetts?
I have invited her, actually, and I did send her an email, and I did not get a response. So
okay.
These candidates I'd love to have her on as well, but these candidates have been invited, and I thought it was very important on this show to extend the invitation to women, especially wise women, which both of them undoubtedly are. I love Jill and I love Roseanne. I love them both, and I just think it's fantastic that both of them are running, and it would be great for either of them to bring recognition to the Green Party, because we have some real challenges to hurdle, because we have political science students here in Tampa that are graduating from the University of South Florida that don't even know what the Green Party is.
Yeah.
That's sad. That's really sad. And, you know, they're being taught, they're being omitted from learning about that through their political science program at USF, and that's by design. I can't think of any other way why they would not be taught this. So they're taught about the two major parties and no other alternative. What kind of political science department is that? I mean, it's mind-boggling. So,
Ray, can I ask you a question? What do you? I hear that. Are you a single mom or are you?
I am.
Okay. What do you do? What is your job?
Wow.
If you don't mind.
That's okay. I've worn many hats. I used to be the academic coordinator at NYU's film and TV program. Currently, I'm stacking apples and sorting through rotten strawberries at a little local organic market in Richmond, Virginia. It is a job. I have health insurance. Not what I'd really like to be doing. I'd like to be paid to be an activist, but, you know, that's my unpaid job.
I think it's great that you have a job right now that gives you benefits. As a single mother, I'm sure that the responsibilities that you carry is tough right now, very tough. No matter
I'm not
how
alone.
Much they tell you. No, you're part of a huge coalition. You really are. The thing is that people are not going to be able to actually afford, and more are not affording, just as you said, the luxury, if you will, of cable. And so children are going to be, the family unit is going to shift here. And maybe that is the ultimate catalyst to bringing a healthy change to this planet, reconnecting with the family and reconnecting with nature.
Well, my daughter can't wait till Richmond Occupy gets its act together to reoccupy. she was so sad when the camp broke down. There
a lot
was
of
a
people
sense
have been, yeah, a lot of people, and it's surprising how many children are actually with their folks or with their siblings are part, actually, of the Occupy story. And it's a part of the story that isn't told very often.
And why did Occupy Richmond break camp? What was the
–
did they have
– the police, you know, the mayor directed the police to – take down our camp at Canalua Plaza, which is a park in the middle of downtown where we had been occupying. I was not a full-time occupier at all. I mean, I spent some nights there. Summer never spent the night there. But afterwards, after the bulldozers or cherry pickers or whatever, they came in the night after I had spent the night. It was Halloween night. and they came in at like 2 a.m. and tore the whole place apart. But we were invited by the publisher and editor of a pre-paper here in Richmond called the Richmond Pre-Press. And he is a an older black man who's run this paper for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And he lives right next door to the mayor, and they share the same driveway. And so he said, well, that's not right. Occupiers, take over my front yard. And so we did. So,
oh, that's wonderful.
It really was wonderful. And so as I was unfurling my huge three-room tent, the Mr. Boone, Ray Boone, the publisher, came out and he said, would you mind moving that a little closer to the mayor's house? And it was just wonderful. And we had Thanksgiving dinner there, and a whole lot of friendships were made. And things, and Occupy's not over. It's just, you know, we're not physically occupying. I mean, there's lots of things. You probably heard about all of the arrests that were done on the Capitol steps here. 33 people were arrested. A lot of those folks were Occupy folks. And were the TRAP regulations, which is aiming to close down all of the clinics in the state. There was a demonstration just the other day about that. So it's not over. It's just not kind of probably looked at as the Occupy.
It's shifting. The
Tampa one is pretty small. It's like I said, it's not as active as it was, even though the actual grounds that the camp is on right now is a local businessman's property, so the police can't come in there and throw them off of the property because it's private property. But like you said, the spirit of Occupy is still there. There's people still doing direct actions, but right now down here in Tampa, the biggest thing that's going on right now is preparing for the Republican National Convention, which will be the last weekend of August. So that's what everybody is working towards, and I just feel that it's going to be a powder keg here because that's like the hottest time of the summer. Surprisingly, our real hot weather happens in August and September, really, are the hottest months. And it's going to be pretty crazy. And I, at this point, don't know how actively I'm going to be involved or if I'm going to be involved at all. So I'm kind of sitting back. I want to see how this thing will get played out in the regards to the organization.
I do think that Occupy is shifting everywhere. Our own group here in Lake Worth is really sort of a reputation for being a little activist hive. Earth First is publishing this year from our Night Heron Center down here. And the local constabulary, the police, the sheriff's department, I have to say, have been, if anything, protective of the Occupy group here. We're sort of, you know, different that way. There's been no jackboot shielded, you know, brutality brought down on us. We're called Occupy Palm Beach County, and there's just a few of us that are still hanging in, but we do actions on foreclosures, people occupying people's property. And I'm responsible for my own business, so what I do is what I can through the Here Be Monster series of shows with the Mic Check show. We do Monday night with Anita and her Wise Woman show. I think it'd be a great idea to try to talk Cherie Foydlin into doing something since she's pulling back off the road right now on the Gulf and the people of the Gulf. It's The only way, Rain, that we're getting the message out there is this drumline of support in all of the different, you know, online little radio shows. If you turn on the regular news, you're not hearing about our side of the street.
Well, I know. I only heard about your show or saw, I guess, I don't know, I think maybe it was Anita, who I think I'm Facebook friends with, that I saw the announcement of the show tonight. And I was like, gosh, I'd never heard of that. I mean, I listened to David Swanson's show. I listened, you know, I catch what I can, but I had never seen it. And I was like, Wise Women Media, that sounds good. And I don't know. But it was the first time I'd seen it. And I'm sadly, I have to admit, I'm a Facebook addict, but it's not a bad thing in all cases because I've gotten people aware. I mean, I grew up in Westport, Connecticut, the Gold Coast on the Long Island Sound, and I've actually exposed a lot of people that didn't have any exposure to, you know, my posts through Facebook. And now I'm actually having, like, followers or something and people liking links when I reconnected with them because I'm nearly 50, so there was a 25-year reunion that I was not able to attend because I was stacking apples at said health food store. But actually getting positive feedback and thank you and, like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that and all of that from people that I would, I can actually say were like Palinistas when I met them on Facebook. So.
Palinistas, I like that.
Palinista. That's a goodie.
It is. I think it is. I think it's really good.
I think she has really become kind of like the opposing tagline of what women should be in this country, like, you know, and one of the things about Roseanne running for office is, and I've heard this from other people too, is that people will sit up and take notice and pay attention when you hit them up with comedy. And who turned Palin into the most ridiculous creature that was talked about everywhere, and that was Tina Fey. Tina Fey's impersonation of Palin was above the top when it comes to comedy. She took the same things that Palin was saying, and she said exactly the same things, but put her own brand of humor with them, with the statements. And right away, nobody was going to vote for Palin. I mean, she was made in, she was scorned and made into a ridiculous vision of what an American woman should be. when I still want a good laugh, I go and pull that up. I go and pull that, any of the footage of Tina Fey impersonating Palin, and I still laugh hysterically when I see it. So, I would say that's a good way to get people to actually start to think serious. I mean, when you look at the things that Roseanne Barr has said, not just lately, but even back on her show when she was discussing topics that had never been discussed on television before. You can look at Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher, even though some of the things he says are really just, I don't agree with them at all, but still he's pretty hilarious. People are actually, they sit up and take notice when you hit them up with politics, but you do it in a funny way. George Carlin, another perfect example. So,
right.
Well, George Carlin was an activist.
I think that's a way to reach
activist.
The masses.
He would tell
because
you.
Otherwise, most people are not getting it. They're not getting it. And I don't, to me, it's not happening fast enough. It needs to happen faster. So what do you all think of that?
Well, one of the members of Occupy is running against Eric Cantor. There are three Democratic candidates, one won the primary. His name is Wayne Powell, but he really is just Republican light.
He's a corporate Democrat.
Yeah. But my friend, Vivek Jain, J-A-I-N, his first name is V-I-V-E-K, he's actually a medical doctor that went to VCU Medical School. He is teaching a course in social justice at VCU. He's not practicing medicine at this time. And he's only 31 years old, and he was born in India. And he is the most well-read fellow I have ever come across. And he just looked at the Democratic candidates, and he said, well, hell, I would be better suited for this. And so he's running.
What is his name again?
His name his name is Vivek Jain. It's V-I-V-E-K. Last name is J-A-I-N. He is on Facebook. I think it's Vivek Jain for Congress. I mean, he has his personal page. But we've been collecting signatures to get him on the ballot.
Let me interrupt you one moment. I do a political roundtable, as it were, and platform for especially activist candidates and around Occupy and the Gulf situation. I would love to get in touch with Mr. Jain and have him on our Sunday show to allow him to put his message out. That would be wonderful. That's something that we do over at the Sunday show. You can also find myself and Anita at on Facebook through Journey with Roundtree 7. We'd really love to have you in the chat there on that.
I wrote that down, and we'll go there. And I will introduce you to the event.
Hey, that would be great because the Sunday show, a progressive writer that I've known for years, Jack Jodell, helps me to host it. But this last Sunday we had Occupy the Landscape, the We Will Not Be Silent Artist Collective on. They're doing a walk to raise money up in upstate New York.
I've been reading about that. Laurie Arbiter and...
Yeah, and Sarah, they were on with us on Sunday. Right there on the show page that you're on listening to this, you can see a link from Here Be Monsters to the Sunday show and listen to it. They are wonderful ladies. They're doing, and you know, their inspiration for what they're doing. And Anita, I'm wondering if you knew about, and I'm pretty good with stuff. You know, I have a pretty good collection of little known information, those trivia things. But, you know, they started their collective after a group of dissidents and resistance to Hitler in Nazi Germany called the White Rose, brother and sister.
I've heard of the White Rose.
Huh?
Heard of the White Rose, yeah.
I actually never had. I'm not surprised you have, but I actually never had. But it was wonderful information. So I don't mean to interrupt you, Rain. Please continue.
Oh, no, I was not going. I had no.
I will definitely find him on Facebook and let him know how I found out about him and ask him if he would like to come on and speak about his platform. Anita also booked a fellow in, actually, wasn't Bruce, isn't Bruce in Virginia too?
Yeah, Bruce is in Virginia District 8, Bruce Shuttleworth. He's running against, I think it's a 20-year incumbent, Jim Moran, who's like he's definitely a Democrat in name only. We call him Dinos down here in Florida. But he's really
He's not a radical, but he is a real progressive, and he does not shy away from you asking him honest questions about all of the issues. He really does. He does come forth.
Yeah, we had him on the show, or actually Gwen's show. He did amazingly well with the questions that he was asked, and
I wasn't easy on him at all. I asked him about he's ex Navy pilot, and guy reads like a Jack Ryan or a Tom Clancy character, you know. He did not shy away from talking about Julian Assange or Bradley Manning or WikiLeaks or Occupy. He really fully addressed honestly. And I have to say, his honesty was disarming.
Yeah. He just seems to be a really real, genuine person. So,
because I do know people in the eighth, but I have not been paying attention to that race at all.
Thanks for
bringing it up.
Yeah, from what I understand, too, there is a Green running for that same office, and I wasn't aware of this till about several days ago. So there is a Green running. I think there's one other person running, a Republican. I don't recall the name. Then there's the Democrat that's the incumbent, which is Jim Moran, and then there's Bruce Shuttleworth. So that's what I know about so far. Now, is this is he a Green or a Democrat?
No. Vivek is independent.
Independent.
Through and through. He's almost to the left of me, and that's pretty bizarre. he's really, I adore him. One of the things in Virginia, at least, and I'm sure elsewhere, when someone is running as a Green, you have to kind of look behind the credentials to find out whether it's Green Party of the United States of America, which I feel I'm one of them. I've gotten all the Greens on the ballot for the last number of years by petitioning and so forth. There's also something called the Independent Greens, and they're often referred to as Greens, but they're not. They're people that are funded by Republicans, and they will run on something like, clean rail or something like that, but they're really not, and they're really just to divert votes from Democrats.
Oh, I didn't even know about these people.
Yeah.
I've read about that before. I've not seen an actual example of it around here, but I'm in South Florida, and just getting Green candidates around here is like, wow.
Oh, it's very exciting, but you have to figure out if they're like Green Party of the U.S. or
yeah.
Are they their own independent Green?
Well, we had mysterious people actually last voting cycle. Very, very mysterious people signing up to run for office. One was a 21-year-old who had no idea about the issues or anything local. And other people, we couldn't even, they would put their address on the election, the election paperwork.
Right.
So they would file themselves as Green. And then we would go to their homes, and they wouldn't be there. There was nobody ever answering the door.
These
are people like you said that were. You have to, here in Florida, you have to have thousands of petition signatures, or you have to pay $10,000. Okay, these people weren't collecting signatures; they paid the $10,000 to do this.
Well, you're not allowed to do that in Virginia. In Virginia, to run for president, you need to have 10,000 signatures with 400, at least 400 in each district, to get Nader on the ballot, to get David Cobb on the ballot, who I adore, who's the face of Move to Amend now.
I did a show with him through Anita putting him on there.
Oh, God, I love him. Well, anyway, but you have to do the signatures. And you probably know, or may not, but Newt Gingrich, Rick Perry, Santorum did not get on the ballot in Virginia. Did not submit the necessary signatures. And then, so the Republicans, wanted to, call this emergency session, we have to change the rules. because it suited them. But luckily, that did not pass. I mean, actually, I wanted it to pass because it would allow ballot access to people that are good people that want to run that aren't beholden to the party. Parties, but it didn't pass. So.
Oh, well, and this is, of course, we wouldn't have learned this if we hadn't spoken to you, because they weren't going to discuss this on CNN. So.
Well, I really appreciate you taking my call. I'm quite honored.
Well, I hope that you call again, because we have a show here every Monday. And we want and value and definitely are grateful to have, people come on that have intelligent things to say and that, want to converse, because I don't think we can unify until we know about each other. Because
right.
as we've discussed, even the election laws from state to state are completely different. What you have to do to get somebody on the ballot, people don't realize that until there's election reform and we have all these election laws unified and consistent, I'm sorry, but this is voting in this country is, excuse the French, it's just one big clusterfuck.
I know. Well, McDonnell, our governor, just signed into law a voter ID law yesterday or the day before, which will further keep people from being able to vote. Two times. I've lived here since 2000. Yeah, 2000. Two times I've gone to my polling place, and I live in the city of Richmond. It's predominantly black, predominantly votes Democratic. Two times since I've been here. One, I don't think they were presidential, actually. One might have been presidential. Certainly the last one I voted in was just a primary thing. But I got to my voting place, and there were notes all over the place saying, voting has been moved to blah, blah, blah. And so, gives you the address, and you have to go somewhere else. If I was walking or if I was on a bike or something, and I'm, I remember one time crying my eyes out. Summer knows how important voting is to me. I don't know that it's so important, like if it mattered it would be illegal or something that Emma said, but I got to the voting place, it was pouring rain, and notices were outside that the polling had been moved to another location, and so I get to the other location and they're locked the doors and the poll people are coming out, and I was like, come on, I was at the right place. That's where I was supposed to vote. And they're like, sorry, there was nothing.
We've got a minute and a half. So
I'm sorry.
I wanted to just give some closing comments. Rain, come on the show anytime you want. We loved having you. Gwen, thanks for being on with. And did you guys have, we're down to just a few seconds. You guys got any parting, anything?
Hey, just everybody stay safe, stay informed as you can.
And occupy. But we also want to thank our sponsors again. That'd be Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, Daughters of Isis, and the Hoodoo blog. And also hit us up so we can keep the show on the air. Go to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. and hit on the WePay button. Go right to WePay and give whatever donation you feel like. Every little bit helps. And see us next week, same time, same place, 8 o'clock Monday night. That's Eastern Standard Time for Wise Women Media. Thank you, Rain, and thank you, Gwen, and y'all have a great night, okay?
You too, darling. It was nice to hear from you, Rain. Call in anytime on any of our shows.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay, good night, everyone.
Thanks for what you do.
Oh,
thank you.
You're welcome.